In this episode, Ryan and I discuss bandwidth and its value, marginal business practices, and a case study in refugee rescue. It went long and in-depth, and we had fun. Hope you enjoy listening.
In 2017-18, somewhere around there, so a few years after Jane had started her first policy, at the suggestion and upon this, what Jane has said was a very powerful and convincing in-person presentation, where there was a third-party software. I don't want to use the name of it. You'd recognize it. It's basically a software program where you input certain information about an individual's assets and liabilities and their income and their cash flows and the inflation rate and the tax rate. And then you can make some assumptions about those things in order to then show the change in the value of a particular asset and then fundamentally the change in the individual's financial situation, right? It's meant to illustrate, although we're not talking about a whole life insurance illustration, but it's meant to depict in some aesthetically pleasing way, ostensibly, what all of this is going to do for you, right? It's the kind of...
It does not matter what the software is called. There are so many versions of financial software, whether it's subscription, whether it's online, whether you create your own Excel spreadsheet. The software name doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
But so Jane went to this in-person event in 1718 and enjoyed it so much that she went back and brought her friends. So this was, you know, it was going good at the time. Jane acquired more than one whole life policies at that time. And was encouraged to take a very specific premium payment strategy with respect to those several policies. And here's how the general suggestion went, at least my understanding of it, and which Jane told me directly. Pay the premium, pay the total annual allowed premium outlay consisting of base and some PUA premium. No term rider happened to be here, just base and PUA. Pay that full amount for 2 years. Okay, Jane at the time was maybe in her mid-50s, somewhere around there. Pay it for 2 years. And then after those first 2 years, you don't have to pay anything out of pocket at all. In fact, what we're going to do is you're going to start taking annual policy loans every year to pay that full annual premium outlay. And so you won't have to pay anything. And
just 2 years.
Just 2 years. 2 years of premium payment. And the result will be, over time, this net accumulation of cash that you can use. Cash.
I bet you this is the exact language or very similar that was used. Not even this precise.
Yep.
Yep. See, here's the net increase.
So the issue is I have the little printout of the looks like an Excel chart with various items shown. We have, for instance, one column that's labeled policy premium deposit. Understand that there are specific laws, at least in Texas, maybe your insurance commission is different, where it's specifically forbidden to conflate a premium with a deposit. When you pay money to a life insurance policy, you are paying premiums. You might be paying a policy loan repayment. You might be paying policy loan interest. You might be paying money to a premium deposit fund rider where money will be set aside to be paid as premium in the future. But a premium is not a deposit. Now, would you know that looking at this chart? No, you wouldn't. It's labeled policy premium deposit.
There are some companies, I got to say, there are some companies out there that use that language, deposit into the PUA in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Do you think that that's on purpose?
And the reason we get sketchy about those words is like when you start using the language that's been established somewhere else in the financial context in order to make it easier for the stupid little customer to grasp, you know, I get irritated by that. So yeah, the word is different. It's not a deposit. It's a premium because it's a life insurance policy. All right. So we've got the policy premium deposit. And then we have another, we have three columns here on the far right. And the three columns here on the far right say, one says loan to pay premium. And we just have $50,000 per year.
It's just the annual loan amount to pay the premium.
Loan amount, right? Yeah. Nowhere on this document is there the compounding, increasing policy loan balance owed to the company.
I'll bet that wasn't. Oh, I don't know. But of course it's not on there.
Who knows? It's not here.
Not right? There.
Then the column next to the loan to pay premium column, the next column says end of year cash value available. Now, the title of the column, end of year cash value available, might give one the impression that the numbers listed here are in fact end of year cash values that are shown on a whole life insurance illustration. Now, as it turns out, I have the original illustration that went with this policy. And the illustrated cash values on that illustration, either be they the guaranteed or the non-guaranteed, are different.
What?
Than the numbers
they don't
shown
even
on
match.
This page.
What, you mean the values that they put in that Excel spreadsheet in the cell don't match the construct of a dividend paying whole life insurance? So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to manipulate. I'm going to put the math in each cell of an Excel spreadsheet and I can't get them to match a life insurance illustration. How do I calculate? I mean, I'm shocked. And wait. And then when you use the words like deposit and then the words like end of year, value. What was that?
End of year cash value.
The
available.
End of year cash value. So in my unknowing mind, like I'm not financially sophisticated, I'm not aware of, I don't understand life insurance and the characteristics, the requirements, the commitments and the functionality of a life insurance policy. But you're using the word deposit and then end of year value. Well, that brings to my mind that I could just go withdraw that.
Oh, well, let's make it even more precise for you. We have the final column, which says, this column says, this one's bad. They've all been bad. This one's really bad. Cash to use after premiums are paid.
Oh, my gosh.
Hold on.
Oh, my gosh.
There's numbers listed in this column, and the method of computation is to take the end of year cash value available figure, numbers which have a source that we don't know. They're not the numbers that were on the illustration in the application in the policy document. There's some different numbers, but the end of year cash value available figure shown on this Excel page, we then subtract the annual loan amount to pay the premium, meaning just the $50,000 in principal lent annually, to get this difference, which is being called cash to use after premiums are paid. The number of that it's that it's so bad is hard to explain. Who knows where these illustrated cash values are coming from? There's no accounting for ongoing growing interest. There's no depiction of the ongoing total cumulative policy loan balance. And what is cash to use after premium? Who knows what that is?
Is there anywhere on there that shows a death benefit amount?
Nope.
Wonder why. Life insurance doesn't come any other way. Doesn't come any other way. So if I don't put the death benefit on there, are we talking about life insurance?
And do you know above these column headings that I've read is Jane's name? the issuing company, the policy number, and the month and year that the policy was issued.
Oh, which so that's would, like personal service, huh?
Which would seem to indicate that the numbers depicted in the Excel chart actually reflect the policy. That's how the document is written. So, this morning...
Why does that bother you, Ryan?
Why does it bother me?
Why does that bother you that all these people do that kind of stuff and take advantage of the unsuspecting American public? I mean,
great question. Multiple reasons. First is, it put her, Jane, in tremendous distress. Because, lo and behold, here we are, 2024... She did what she was told to do, what she was sold to do.
Can I ask a question here? The purpose of that whole interaction was not to just pay a premium. No one's going to pay a life insurance premium just to pay a premium. The death benefit is not even on there, right? So was she even in her own mind like, oh my gosh, I want to buy life insurance? If that were to be true, there'd be a death benefit shown, and I know I'm making an assumption, so that must not be true. All right, so here, what was the ultimate purpose, do you know?
Who knows?
Jane's mind to buy that. Was she going to take income later?
Yeah, future retirement income.
Okay, thank you. Future retirement income. Thank you.
And that's how it's shown as sort of a that sloppy, money to use messy, alternative is version what she was supposed of a tax-qualified plan.
Okay, so that money that available to use was like, potentially presented as retirement income.
I mean, we don't have to speculate. It says cash to use after premiums are paid. One would think that that would then mean you could use the numbers that have dollar signs.
Oh my gosh.
That seem to look like cash amounts to go do something with.
You know, this is just an example of so many things that are wrong in the industry. One of them being this life insurance company gave that agent that contract, and he already had a contract. I'm assuming that that's a male. I don't know. And I know I'm making assumptions. The individual has a life insurance contract and a life insurance license. And that is not the first company. I would bet, I don't know, I said I'm making assumptions. They're pretty fair assumptions after 33 years in the life insurance business. After 20 years in the infinite banking world, in the infinite banking footprint, it's like, and that's probably not the only company that they're affiliated with. And so...
Hey, look, you could make speculation, and they're probably right. I mean, with your perspective, you're probably right. My view in this is... more restricted is that what's here, what's known, what we don't have to speculate about is bad enough.
Exactly. But my point is, it's another example of the life insurance companies earning every black eye that they get.
Yeah. And then, you know, the eager beaver tire kicking validation seeker wants to see the numbers, right? Because the data speak for themselves. The numbers speak for themselves, right? Yeah.
There they are.
Are the numbers telling the truth?
Numbers don't lie, Ryan.
Yeah. Numbers don't speak. People do. Yeah. Okay. And so, yeah, you see the numbers. Uh-huh. Yep. Okay. So what happened? What was the result of this? She did as she was advised. What a shock. Took big loans.
Did you say the premium amount?
On this one policy happens to be $50,000 a year.
And she pays pay a premium for 2 years and then borrow against the policy to pay the future premiums.
Yep.
Yeah, 50,000. And then there's no reference of an outstanding increasing compounding loan balance, which would you know, kind of get substantial at $50,000 a year with no loan repayments.
Yep. And no mention of the death benefit and no mention of the fact that the illustration itself says that the policy will become a modified endowment contract in the 21st policy year.
Oh, well, so the individual probably didn't know enough how to manipulate the illustration to make that.
Yeah. But do that math, right? I'm 55 and 21 years later.
Yeah.
So I'm 76, right?
Income.
In my intellectual prime, right? And then suddenly the tax status of the policy is going to change. And oh wait, what was the whole point of this in the first place? Was it to take passive cash flow later, retirement, so-called retirement income? Yeah. Okay, well at 76, might I be doing that?
And then they're comparing that against a qualified plan and arguing about taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this one, so Jane got herself into a situation where she had substantial outstanding policy loans on these. This was one policy that I've talked about. This Excel sheet has four pages. And each page is for
what? A we just string policy. Them along, and this is how you continually expand. Oh yeah, there's nothing new about that.
Yeah,
yeah.
So she gets herself into a bind where there's a compounding, rising policy loan balance. She's getting older. She can't pay, isn't able to pay the originally illustrated premiums on which all of these illusory fabrications were manufactured, right? All those assumptions are falling through the floor because real life went and happened, right? When the numbers spoke for themselves, they didn't take account of the fact that the future's uncertain. Interesting. Almost like you have to have an advisory perspective in spoken words to get to that kind of thing, right? But no, the numbers speak for the, oh, and look, in the cash to use after premiums, we're going to take those numbers and we're going to make them green. They're green on the page. The other numbers are black.
Right. Everybody's screaming, show us the thing. Show us. You're talking. Show us. Can't see them off on the.
I know. Jane's info is on here. So yeah, take my word. You don't want to listen. Turn it off. I don't care. this is real. I just had this call. Yeah, the numbers are green. Almost like to indicate that they're good.
Are there any red numbers on there?
If something's good, you'd have to expect, well, if it's good, it must exist. But they don't.
Are there any red numbers on there?
No red numbers.
What? Even the loan outgoing is not? No.
Nope.
No, of course not.
Loan to pay premium? Nope. There's not even a negative sign there.
There's not an interest column. There's not a death benefit column. Not an interest column.
No death benefit. No distinction between the premiums. No specification of when the policy is illustrated in the documents to become a MEC. None of it. But yet Jane's name, the issuing company, the policy number, and the issue month and year are at the top of this sheet. Yeah. A name, an office name, every one of you who watches this show would recognize.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
And this is back in 1718.
Okay? 1718.
2017, 2018 time frame.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not innocent. I know exactly who it is.
Yeah.
I'm just talking.
Okay, so what happened? You know, she gets overloaded and she gets stressed out. She ends up, Jane ends up coming into contact, the exact circumstances I don't know, but coming into contact with this colleague, this friend of mine, who is like, OMG.
Not affiliated with the original situation whatsoever.
Unaffiliated entirely.
Yeah.
Right? Unaffiliated entirely. Where this is going is that, where to some extent it already has gone, is Jane has already sold off one of those policies purchased in that 2017-18 timeframe that was sold on this fictitious fabrication of Excel numbers. She went and sold it. It's called a life settlement agreement, a life settlement transaction.
As you said before,
she needs to get rid of the stress and the emotional burden of something that she put so much time, effort, energy, and money into that is now looks nothing like what she was told it was going to be. And of course it doesn't, because what she was told to be was based on information that doesn't exist.
Well, it's creative.
No kidding. Yeah. She wants to get rid of it. And who's to doubt her? Who's to blame her? Now, look, this is called a life settlement agreement. A life settlement agreement is where an individual insured who is not terminally or chronically ill decides to sell a life insurance policy on the secondary market, as we might say, or in other words, to sell a policy to another individual. A life settlement agreement is distinguished between a viatical settlement agreement. A viatical settlement agreement is a life settlement agreement where the insured is either terminally or chronically ill. Okay. Life settlement agreements, viatical agreements. Since Jane did not have a terminal or chronic illness, this was a life settlement agreement. Point being, she's looking to offload these policies because she can't handle the mental, emotional, and financial burden that the most probably illegal sales practices led her to believe she could do. And that takes me to the Texas insurance code. Now, I don't know what your state says, but in Texas, we have the insurance code. Title 5, Protection of Consumer Interests. Subtitle C, Deceptive, Unfair, and Prohibited Practices. Chapter 541, Unfair Methods of Competition and Unfair or Deceptive Acts or Practices. Subchapter A, General Provisions. And then there are various sections. You can get this at statutes.capital.texas.gov. It's public information. Every state where there's licensure of life insurance agents, which is all of them, have rules against deceptive or misleading sales tactics. One of those specific sections says, all right, unfair methods of competition and unfair deceptive acts or practices prohibited. A person may not engage in this state, Texas, in a trade practice that is defined in this chapter as or determined under this chapter to be an unfair method of competition or an unfair or deceptive act or practice in the business of insurance. Don't lie, don't deceive. Pretty freaking basic, man. Now, you can have libertarian objections about the state regulating business. Yeah, yeah. Look, even in a fully private market, fraud, deceit, all that is, in the sense of the natural law, illegal. Okay? So
this break is it down for us, bro.
This is within the bounds of like reasonable restrictions on what you can do in the business. Right? Freedom doesn't mean do whatever the hell you want. Right? It means you have an opportunity to accept a responsibility to do it correctly. All right? The specific sections, some of the specific sections we might care about, refer to.
Read those two that I mean, in addition to whatever you're going to pull up, read those two that.
What's that? Read what?
The two that I pointed out before the mic turned on. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that right there is, you know.
So here is section 541.061. Misrepresentation of insurance policy. It is an unfair method of competition or an unfair or deceptive act or practice in the business of insurance to misrepresent an insurance policy by, and we have five options. Number one, making an untrue statement of a material fact. Two, failing to state a material fact necessary to make other statements made not misleading.
I love that.
Considering the circumstances under which the statements were made. Number three, making a statement in a manner that would mislead a reasonably prudent person to a false conclusion of a material fact. Jane was in her early, I think she was 49 or 50 at the time, skilled professional. To say that she's a reasonably prudent person is to say nothing at all. She's perfectly competent. Four, making a material misstatement of law. Or five, failing to disclose a matter required by law to be disclosed, including to failing to make a disclosure in accordance with another provision of this code. So that number two. Failing to state a material fact necessary to make other statements made not misleading, considering the circumstances under which statements were made. Now, look, I'm not an attorney. This isn't a legal position. I can just read, and I'm looking at information that's publicly available and what has been shared with me directly.
That would be a law that governs you if you're a licensed insurance agent. It's okay to know what it says.
Right. Yeah, how about that? It's okay to go read the law.
Oh, my gosh.
What a concept.
Yeah, what a concept.
Yeah. Now, in no version of the universe can somebody tell me that this Excel sheet fully and completely states all relevant and material facts such that there is no failure to state a material fact necessary to make other statements made, not misleading. Well, in no version of the universe does this chart meet that statutory requirement. Section 541.061, misrepresentation of an insurance policy under the unfair and deceptive acts or practices in the insurance business in the Texas insurance code. Now, maybe in another state, they're for that. Maybe elsewhere.
Yeah, no.
They're all for it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I don't think so. So yeah, let's let the numbers speak for themselves. If the numbers could speak for themselves, we wouldn't need an unfair methods of competition and unfair deceptive acts or practices chapter of the insurance code. Now, what do you do with that? You know, you file a complaint. What, are you going to go back and do a he said, she said, they said, we said? You know, who has direct experience? Who remembers? Right? Jane has communicated to me that this particular agent told her that he would stop communicating with her in writing, that he would only continue to communicate with her verbally. These people are telling you. They're telling you what they're doing.
Maybe he's just dyslexic and can't spell.
So
it doesn't have spell check.
It continues.
Oh my gosh.
It continues because, oh wait, Jane is obviously upset. What are we doing? How can we fix this? What's going on? How do I handle this rising loan balance? How's this going to work for me later in life? This isn't what it looks like when I first got it. Help me understand. The agent tells her, why don't you just sell it? In fact, Jane tells me that the agent told Jane that he could find somebody who would buy it at first 20% more. The number later changed to 10. Funny how that happens. That he could find it. Now, look, I'm sure I could sort through the insurance code and find something regarding this too. But my understanding is that when an agent is contracted with a company,
there's a contractual relationship between the agent and the company that he's an agent of.
Right. The agent in life insurance, that's exactly right. In life insurance, the principal and the principal agent relationship is the life insurance company. Yeah. The agent is an agent of the company. The agent has a fiduciary relationship to the company. And here's the agent telling the dissatisfied client who's unhappy that you should just sell it. I'll find some way to offload it for you.
I just, as a commentary, and bravo, young man, I love this. It's like, so I happen to know the company, right? I'm an agent for the company, and contractually in every other company that exists, especially in the infinite banking footprint, but all life insurance companies, that is a violation of the agent contract right there.
Oh my God.
If I am appointed with a particular company and I induce, entice, encourage a individual policy owner with that company, whether they're my client or not, right? Because I'm appointed an agent of and for this company. If a policy holder of that company, I entice, encourage, promote, and in any way for them to sell that policy, I have violated the contract that I have with the agent or with the company. Okay, and I'm just pointing out that, you know, that's in fact true. Now, could it be in her best interest to sell the policy? I don't know. I don't know all the particular details. I do know the negatives when an individual sells a policy. So, and I'm just wondering if those, and I know I'm wondering and assuming, and along with that encouragement to, why don't you just sell the policy? Were there any disclosures that are probably required by law to disclose the damages or the potential damages to the policyholder? Were they ever discussed?
Who knows?
Not a betting man. But yeah, I would win that one.
Yeah, I was attempting to find on the fly here a section from an actual agent's contract that specifies exactly what you're talking about. But that is my understanding too, is that you can't turn around. Now look, my understanding of something called churning is where you go get a policy put in force on the expectation that you're going to have it turn around and have it be sold. Or
well, that's on a life insurance application. Somewhere in the application that you signed are all the disclosures that are required by the life insurance company. But it's also, there's a question on there. Have you had the conversation or do you intend to sell this policy? And maybe she didn't have the intention of selling the policy 10 years previous.
Right.
Of course she didn't. She was expecting.
She's going to keep it.
Yeah. You know, passive income in the latter, you know, years of her life.
Pretty convenient though.
Very.
That suddenly she's no longer happy with it, but the same agent who sold it's going to help her sell it. Ugh.
Well, and there are other resolutions, you know, that are potentially available in place currently to sell a policy.
A life settlement agreement is not the only resolution. Mm-hmm. There are, in fact, I have a contract with that company, so as I will become her agent of record, and we'll get into it, and we'll see what if anything can be done.
Why would you do that, Ryan?
Because it's, what else are you going to do?
Because right thing to do for her?
Yeah, you were screwed over. You've been misled. You made decisions of a substantial magnitude.
It's affecting you mentally, physically.
Yeah, by somebody who has been in and around and affiliates with things related to IBC, and I'm just gonna, you know, let you drown.
Oh my gosh, that's kind of I want to kind of go to that. Was this presented as a, you know, 7, 8 years ago? Was it presented in the IBC concept or conversation? Do you know?
I don't know exactly. My understanding is that she was seeking to do IBC at that time. Whether or not words were used in the particular transaction or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And the future's unknown. I don't know the future. But then this is another. There's so many examples here. And before we turn the cameras on, I mean, I knew what we were going to talk about today. I just didn't know it was going to take an hour and a half to get there. It's like this type of an example of a case of a situation, right, is so rife for education, you know, to the consumer, to the individual who is participating in the infinite banking concept, to the individual who might want to participate in the infinite banking concept, to the individual that actually may own life insurance policies, right? This kind of material does not exist and should not exist, in my opinion, in the free world beyond what we're going through today. So I'm just saying there are so many things, teachable moments, as they say. There's so many opportunities to learn on so many different levels in an example like this. It should be, you know, the barbarian shouldn't have
get
access
out
to it.
Get him out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's like, of course that was under the IBC auspice. And then this is just another example. This can live in the free world. Oh, when the individual, the guy that commented the other day on your Facebook post, you know, well, how do we know what the value is? I don't know what you know, and I could care less what you know. An individual like that, you know, I'm just another barbarian. I don't know. He may be a great guy. I personally want no association with anyone who even comes near that kind of practice, whether it's intentional, accidental, they're trying to do the right thing and they just don't know. Knowledge or ignorance is damn near as dangerous as stupidity. I'm just saying, you know, what's the difference? Well, you can change ignorance, right? You can learn. To me, oh my gosh, when people say, well, and they may not say it, but they sometimes act like it. Well, Ryan, you practice the infinite banking concept. That's all I want to practice. You're just like them, and they're just like them, and they're just like you.
Yeah, we're all the same, right?
Yeah, no, 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 we're not.
Yeah. It's so, and you could, like, I had this call with her, you know, it was an hour and 15 minute with Jane and with my friend and colleague. Like the sadness and like the fragility in her voice. I mean, you can't, it's like, what do you even say? You know, I can't apologize for these people because I didn't have any control over that. And then she's just been left out in the wind. I mean, on these, on the ones you still trying
sell
to
get, it. Like, he has any idea where to go sell a life insurance policy.
Yeah, just go sell
it's
it.
It's not like it's a car and there's a car dealership on every side of the road, all five roads that you travel on. I mean, where's the individual? Okay, I'm going to go to Google and there'll be about four or five companies that are out there like, yeah, we'll make an offer. We'll make an offer. Where's an individual? Where's a lady who's in her early to mid 60s going to go sell a life insurance policy? Oh my gosh.
So they go down to the Walmart policy market and put it on the sale.
Well, she's going to get, well, how do we know what the value is, Ryan?
Exactly. What's the, yeah. Yeah. And in fact, she did have another policy, which not related, which from a company which with which I am not contracted with. Nobody watching this works at these companies anyway, so they don't care. But she had another policy, similar type circumstance. Built up a huge loan balance, and in fact, I am directly purchasing it from her, right? To address that one problem. She's going to end up with
a reasonable, fair offer
of thousands of dollars more than she would have got had she surrendered with the company.
Oh, so then I'm still assuming here that value exchange might approach something that she was 7, 8, 9 years ago expecting to occur. So my point here is whatever you gave her in that exchange, whatever that consideration was, that consideration can maybe be put to use. However, she may or may not do that. Hopefully she does it in an advised way. And, God bless her. I love her. To produce the income that she originally wanted in the very beginning.
Right. And let's not be all Pollyanna about this too, right? I'd be happy to own the policy. Now, I'm able to manage it. And whereas she has ended up in a position she did not expect based on what was told to her at the beginning. So she gets made more than whole. And I acquire a piece of property that I'm happy to purchase.
And you've offered, and I think you mentioned it earlier, to become the agent of record, which just means a servicing agent, right? No revenue.
Nothing else, no revenue, no nothing. Revenue. Just fixing the freaking problem, all right? And I've told
my
client,
much bandwidth do you have to do all that?
Not enough.
It's like kind of tying it into with the bandwidth, And I don't know how many clients we've taken, orphaned, what's the term that you came up with?
Refugees.
The refugees. Oh my God, that exist
from a
in the
war torn advisory relationship.
Yes, it's like yes. I don't know how many
this
that
is
we have.
A quintessential example.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I've got a 12-foot conference room table full of this stuff, full of it that can't live in the free world. Hence the garden, man. And when I walk into my garden, I don't want to see any freaking weeds.
Right. I treated my lawn. I have my dog, Lucy, who I love and who lives a very posh life for a dog. I go out and I treat the grass every few months to kill all the bugs. And it's like, no mercy. Give it more than it needs. Like, get it out. Get it out. I don't want it anywhere near what I love. And so what do you have to do? I have to go to the store. In fact, I got to go today because this eclipse, the hundreds of thousands of people coming. Oh, I guess I got to go today to get the bags of the stuff to do the front yard. It takes time, effort, energy. I got to put the boots on, get all dirty, go out there, do it because I care, right? I take the actions necessary to keep what I love safe. And if you take that mindset to somebody like a client refugee, from somebody who has been discarded by a prior agent, what are you going to do? Yeah, you got to take the time. And then it takes, then you got to sit, you got to listen. It's not fill out the form, let me send you something to your inbox, sign here. No. We got to I want to hear the full story.
I'll build an illustration that looks like every other one that I sent out yesterday in email. Don't call me, just sign.
Yeah. And you know what? Fortunately, this woman is still capable of trusting somebody in the financial services world at all. Because could you blame her? Could you blame her if she didn't want anything to do with any of this ever again?
Hell no.
Of course not. In fact, you might say, I would have done the same thing. So as it turns out, the company that, the transaction that that I intended to do had nothing to do with this. I was going to go acquire a different piece of property, and for predictable but reasons that I did not
that could live predict, on the other side of that gate.
For reasons I didn't predict, that didn't work out because the money was not sent when it should have been, and so that other purchase completely fell through. And on the same day as I have this conversation with Jane, I find out that the funds will be available just in time because this policy is headed for the end of its grace period. It's about to lapse. If she didn't sell it, she didn't get rid of the one that I bought, it's going away. And she's either going to get less with the company or she's going to get more with me. Right? Now, listen very clearly to this. This is me telling you what I have experienced this week. This is not a solicitation to purchase anybody's policy. That is strictly regulated by the Texas Insurance Code. There's all sorts of disclosures. I am not in that business. This is just an example of the kind of crap that goes on with the front of just let me see the numbers. In fact, Jane said, you can't read those charts. You can't misinterpret those charts any other way other than it's going to be good. And I'm like, yeah, that, if you just look at that, that's exactly what you would think.
No understanding of life insurance. A minimum of understanding of a contract. Life insurance is a contract. You purchase a policy, it's a contract. Of your contractual rights and your contractual obligations. Another topic that can be really deeply fleshed out that shouldn't live in anywhere else in the free world anyway, other than with clients only.
Yeah, and then others, and then just go sell it, you know?
Oh my gosh. No, okay.
What counts to make that transaction valid? What are all the elements of a valid life settlement agreement? Can you find an attorney who knows what I just said? I tried 3 different offices in Texas that have life insurance, life, something about this on their, yeah, we don't take that. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, what is that? Yeah, but just go sell it. You know, just go transfer the ownership. Because that's all that the state says you have to do, right? Is just go transfer the ownership of the company. I mean, the perception that insurance is just something you get your little government permission slip and then, oh, that's wild, wild west. Go do what you want. Okay. No wonder. It's no wonder that agents have the reputation they have. What a surprise.
You know, not every agent out there, of course, does this stuff. But
it's a minority.
Huh? Okay.
Look, willing to believe it's a minority. Let's put it that way.
Okay. You're willing to believe it's a minority. I choose to believe it's a minority. And the critic may wonder, you know, why James, are you so negative? Why are you, you know, the fear, doubt, and uncertainty and that kind of illegitimate, ignorant statement from licensed agents that are doing the infinite banking concept as a part-time gig or a side gig, you know, because they're, you know, engineers or whatever else they are in their, you know, free time or pastime.
Cost is low enough.
Oh my God. And it's like, okay, so you speak in generalities. I get a lot of comments, James, I know you're fixing to say this or that, or you were going down a road and then you caught yourself. That happens all the time, right? Because it's out into the big free, anybody can wander on and plant weeds, right? Like,
or accuse you of defamation. There, by the way, there's been no free speech in the life insurance business in finance generally since the early 1900s.
Yeah.
You can't talk negatively or characterize particular things negatively. We have to be careful what we say if we want to stay in this business. Now, you know, whatever happens, happens. But
well, I mean, and then, you know, we talk about the great idea, the you can become your own banker, right? And we're using dividend paying whole life insurance. You know, I don't give personal advice to anyone who's not my client. None. Zero. This is not financial advice. This is an encouragement to educate yourself and to consider some of the things that are out there behind the flashy illustrations, the flashy presentations. I mean, well-built illustration. She's an able, capable individual in their early to mid-50s. And out of her own mouth, which I didn't speak to her, the chart doesn't lead you to any other conclusion. My interpretation of what she said, that's exactly why the presentation was put together, to lead you to a predetermined conclusion that, oh, benefits the agent. No loan balance, no compounding loan balance. Well, it may be, maybe it sounds really egregious in this particular example, right? No death benefit. You mean the gamified clown world that the infinite banking footprint is not turning into, but that is expanding within the infinite banking footprint? This is just one example. Yeah. How do you get to a Frankenstein-type policy? Manipulated numbers, manipulated illustrations, third-party software that is incomplete, cherry-picked on the timelines. You know, look, a couple of examples that I want to bring up while the camera's still rolling here. One of them is glaring in my mind. Had a client. He's still a client now, and this was several years ago. He was in his seventh year of a beautifully built policy, right? And of course, and then, and this will be included in other stuff. You know, I'm working on a solo. How apropos, you know, I was telling Mr. Griggs this morning before the cameras and the recording started, I'm like, I love nature. I love nature. It's a natural, what I'm working on, what he experienced last week, two not even connected conversations or ideas, although we talk weekly, you know, and it's like things like this, the third party illustration software, the massaged presentations, the manipulation that goes on to the unsuspecting American consumer. I mean, I want to talk about that, and I can't wait to talk about it. But this one, 7 years into the policy, you know, and I think the topic is going to be some clickbaity title, like, you know, when IBC fails or when infinite banking fails, something, because I'm going to go right through examples of why and how infinite banking fails. And so this guy was in the middle of a potential fail, reduced the premium, had big outstanding loans, barely paying interest, if any, reducing the premium. And then here comes, you know, a great presentation that he ran across. And so he reaches out and says, look, yeah, oh my gosh, here, let me, save me. You know, this is terrible. And then the third party software that was used, and I have all the printouts, right, that was used to convince this individual that he should 1035 exchange that policy, right? The numbers look great. The numbers on the chart, the numbers on the Excel spreadsheet or whatever software was used is like convincing. Of course, this is the thing to do. Oh, okay. So then it almost gives me, and I'm not, this doesn't apply in this case that Ryan has brought up today. This applies in the case that I'm speaking of. It would almost give me an excuse. I don't want to address the discipline of not repaying the loans. The lack of discipline. I don't want to address the lack of discipline.
Paper it all over.
Yeah, let's just start all over, right? In the new 1035, you know, the remaining residual surrender values from one policy into another because that's so bad, and I've got a third party constructed, manipulated presentation chart to prove it. And I've also got a manipulated Frankenstein illustration to receive those funds.
And the 1035 will trigger a new commission cycle, of course.
Of course. Do you think ever one time the consideration was given for the value of the 7 years that was spent in that policy and the value that would transfer to a new policy replacing that? No, not ever. Never. As a matter of fact, most of the time when you get into a 1035 situation or circumstance, and I'm not talking about universal life or collapsing policies. There's a proper place for that, right? But it is not the first solution to 1035 exchange. You know, I'll guarantee you, call up that agent's office and they'll talk about a 1035 exchange into another company that they're appointed with.
It'll be, oh yeah, we can do that. Oh yeah, we can do that. Oh, we didn't mean, suddenly we're struck with that angelic innocence, right? Like we were talking about in the very beginning of this, like, oh, what can I, I'll just help.
Yeah.
It's like,
I love that. But do you think that agent, in my example, I know it didn't, the agent ever considered the, in truth, in totality, not leaving out the death benefit, not leaving out the dividend, not leaving out the action of a compounding loan balance, not leaving, I mean, when the totality of information was never presented.
Who knows?
Ever.
I don't know. What I know
is that— I'm speaking of the one I'm talking about,
what,
I know.
Yeah, what was presented in this situation, in my opinion, is misleading. And everything over and above that may make it better or worse. At the end of the day, this is still what it is. So she's going to end up a lot better off than she could have. I could have told her, by the way, of course I didn't, that I could have done, take the 1035 route too, right?
Yep.
Get me a little commission. Rather than me paying her money to buy something, I could have had her buy something else to trigger a new commission cycle. Of course we didn't do that. Wasn't the right. She wanted out. And of course she wants out. Plus new application, policy's 11 years old, and go back through underwriting 11 years down the line.
There's so many things.
Yeah, just 1035. Just we have sailed clear past the first 10 better solutions. We're way past that now. Yeah. So we're just trying to make the best of a very bad situation. And I am paying to do that. So let's not get into this like, oh, he's gonna make the money off of this. I'm acquiring a piece of property I want. I like dividend paying whole life insurance. I buy a lot of it. I'm going to buy more. So, yep, not a secret, not a mystery. And if you think whole life's the worst place to put money, great. We don't have to continue the discussion, right? But if you know something about IBC, you might say, oh, that's, yeah, I can see why. She, it's called mutually beneficial exchange. I know it's very difficult for bureaucratic-minded type people to understand this, but she's getting something that's going to put her in a better position. I'm getting something that over time is going to put me in a better position. And she doesn't know this yet, but her kids will remain partial beneficiaries, the whole separate thing. But there's a little example of what's gone on. You know, that was one of many things that have happened this 1 week. And to bring it back to the bandwidth point, yeah, it's about time for a nice little digitally walled garden with a nice, beautiful paywall that, you know, maybe four people sign up. Perfect. I'd love to pour into the four people. I truly don't care. It's really about developing a body of work, developing deep exploration for people, a perspective for people who want it. And what I've learned recently is that in order to do that properly, you have to take steps to explicitly exclude people who do not participate in good faith. And I have made that error in the past, and it's been a disservice to the people that I should have been serving because I didn't fully think that through. But that's changed, and we're going to fix it. So
that's where, I mean, the reasons that you got to the proper decision and the experience of getting to the proper decision for you. I mean, at the end of the day, a place and a time allocated to develop a body of work. Just period. What is the value of that? Untold, unknown, one person signed up, 4,000 people signed up. The value is in the body of the work. My opinion.
There you go.
Okay, what else?
I'm good. I'm hungry.
Well, you sure you got everything out? I mean, I don't want you to leave with something remaining. You
know? No, it's only 2.5 hours, so.
No problem. Okay, thanks for listening. I had fun.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.